What's he in? Is he in Mag 7?
Mm.
I hope. Or is he in something that got bumped?
I don't know. Let's look.
Because that's this week, I believe. Not this week.
That would be the week. He is in The Magnificent Seven.
Okay, that works. Because I had no... Going through this list, I had no idea why we were doing an Ethan Hawke list. What's up? This is Movies on Up. Cursed for eternity. No force in heaven will release them. No power on earth can save them. I am Dave, joined by my force from heaven, Mr. Ryan.
So you went with that tagline that was three sentences long.
I did. I did.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm glad I got to hear what it was.
I was committed. I'm Dave. He's Ryan. Tagline for this week, super long. Cursed for eternity. No force in heaven will release them. No power on earth can save them. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up. moviesonup@gmail.com. Facebook.com/moviesonup or the Twitter @moviesonup, which is now active, I guess.
I think we have Sarah somebody P's doing it
now.
Some of our best people are on it.
This week, The Magnificent Seven shoots its way into theaters, and we've already done a favorite Denzel Washington list. I think it's a little too premature to do a favorite Chris Pratt list.
Too early to shoot that list.
Yeah, so we thought, hey, Ethan Hawke is probably in this movie, so let's do our favorite Ethan Hawke
movies.
There's
at least seven people, so yeah. He's bound to be one of them.
I thought this would be interesting because we've done a lot of like movie stars. We've done your Denzels, your Marky Marks, your Rocks. Like Ethan Hawke, dude's been acting for like 30 years, but I don't know that he's... I don't think anybody ever equates him with like Brad Pitt or Clooney or
Tom Cruise. Like he's not, you don't want to say he's not A-list.
People know him.
Yeah.
You know him to see him, but
is he like B-list? And is that bad?
The movies he headlines aren't marketed as like Ethan Hawke movies. Like
yeah,
The Purge, true. Sinister. Those were The Purge and Sinister, not Ethan Hawke.
Ethan Hawke, right? His name isn't above the title.
Yeah. It's hard to not consider him A-list when he's been working for so long, but he's not a name above the title kind of guy.
That's better, because I hate that A-list, B-list
kind
of shit. Who actually determines that? Certainly, it shouldn't be me, but I think name above the title is good. It's not Tom Cruise in Top
Jack
Gun
Reacher.
2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Ethan Hawke is a good one, because he goes back a ways.
30 years or so, right?
Yeah, and I think of all the lists we've done, this might... Between my most recent and my first one.
Actually, is there a 30-year difference?
There might be.
Are they all from 1992?
They're early. There's one really, really early and then a few later.
I feel like of all the lists that we've done, actor lists specifically, and you admit to it, like there certainly is a wheelhouse of like 80s and 90s where you saw a lot of movies. And certainly I kind of feel like that was, not to say that Ethan Hawke is past his prime, but he was doing a lot of stuff then. He was super active in those years. So kind of his sweet spot was right in your wheelhouse.
This list goes against that because most everything like from 05 on, he's been doing like really cool stuff. Even now he's got a bunch of cool credits coming up. This list I'm most interested in because there's 30 years, there's a lot. I mean, there's a couple Ethan Hawke movies that I think would come to people's minds right away.
One of them's on my list.
Yeah, I don't know that we'll have a lot of crossover because this is such a wide-ranging list. It's almost like that Danny Elfman list where he had 100 movies to choose from.
That's true.
From like 30 years. You don't have 100 movies, but he's got a lot of quality movies in a 30-year career so far. So your number five favorite Ethan Hawke movie
is the aforementioned Sinister from 2012, directed by Scott Derrickson, starring Ethan Hawke, Juliette Rylance, and James Ransone. I did have this spot reserved for the Ethan Hawke horror movie of my choice, and it was either going to be this one or the other movie you mentioned, The Purge. I feel like we've talked a little Purge recently with election year coming out this summer.
And we did an episode on the second
two,
Purge.
Yeah, the one that didn't have Ethan Hawke in it up to that point. Even with Ethan Hawke and Lena Headey, who are both not above the title people, but like legit actors that people recognize and know and are talented. The star of The Purge was The Premise, and we've talked a lot about that. So for an Ethan Hawke specific list, I thought I would go with the horror movie that he had a bit more of the heavy lifting to do. I kind of feel like if the premise of this one is a little bit reminiscent of a lot of different movies, it's a bit like The Ring, where you watch the video, you end up dead. He's certainly watching a video a lot in this, and part Amityville Horror, because there is this atrocity that happened in this house that he moves into, has a bit of a questionable past. When he starts digging into it, some questionable things start to happen. When I look at horror movies recently, or as an adult, I'm not really basing whether or not I think they're good on whether or not they scare me. Apart from a couple jump scares here and there in movies, I watch horror movies like I watch any other genre, just to be entertained. What I'm mostly looking for is just a couple cool moments, something that'll make me step back and say, oh, that was kind of neat. I've seen people get murdered before. I've seen books drop. I've seen a lot of the standard stuff. But if you can do something that makes me go, oh, that was kind of neat, then I think we're on to something here. And I do believe that Sinister does that in a couple different points. I do really like the grainy footage that Ellison Oswald, I believe was his name, pours over like it was the Zapruder film in hopes of getting some inspiration for this book that he's trying to write. And I kind of liked the ending too. I guess you could sort of see it coming, but I felt like the abruptness of the ending, you know what's going to happen, but you don't necessarily know when it's going to happen. It's just kind of like movie. Oh, yep, that was it. Which I guess can be bad, but I'd prefer that ending as opposed to one that gets drawn out. More on that later. I think for a movie that had a relatively small budget and relatively lower expectations on my end, I think it ended up being a really fun way to spend 2 hours. It didn't have to be a franchise. Now it was successful enough to make a sequel.
There was a Sinister 2, right?
Yeah.
Was
yeah.
he in it?
I don't believe
I
so.
I have no. That came out in The Conjuring and
yeah.
all those. There were like three of them that all came out at the same
yeah, there
Insidious.
Was, yeah.
They get lumped together.
Because they're all kind of the same in that they're not made for a lot of money. They don't necessarily have a transcendent star. The movies are kind of the stars. And they're all pretty good. I mean, Sinister, Ethan Hawke wasn't in Insidious, so I couldn't put that on the list. And like I said, we've talked enough about The Purge, so I thought this may be the last time we ever talk about Sinister on the show. But I thought it was a pretty decent horror movie.
Shannon Sossaman stepped into the Ethan Hawke role in the second one. Oh, not man. As Ethan Hawke, but as the parent or whatever.
They sometimes wear the same hair.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to her. My number one, you talked about low expectations for Sinister.
Your number five.
My number five.
Yeah, let's start there.
Is a little higher than Low Expectations. It is from 1998. Great Expectations. Directed by somebody who would later go on to direct one of my top three favorite movies ever, Alfonso Cuarón. Starring Ethan Hawke, Gwyneth Paltrow, Anne Bancroft, Robert De Niro, Hank Azaria, Chris Cooper, Kim Dickens is in there. This is one of those weird ones that this was kind of piggybacking off of that Romeo and Juliet, the Baz Luhrmann, Leo Claire Danes joint, where it was a modern telling of a Shakespeare. This tried to be a modern telling of a Dickens joint. So they did try to update it, but keep that old-timey feel. I kind of put this in regard with American Psycho. I compare these movies a lot because American Psycho, I think, is a really, really good movie that's a really, really terrible adaptation of that book. There's enough from the book to give it the same name, but it's not the same. That's kind of how I feel about Great Expectations. There is a lot of Great Expectations in there, but there's a lot of not Great Expectations in there. But
not
the
so Great Expectations.
Yeah, but the end result is a pretty good movie. Ethan Hawke, Gwyneth Paltrow are really good. I mean, Ethan Hawke, he can carry a movie. Like, that's what he's been doing. And he's been carrying movies almost for 30 years. He's not somebody who's had a 30-year career by showing up as, like, the best friend. Most of his career, he is the leading guy. He's just not leading these, like, tentpole movies. So I feel like this was one of his bigger marquee releases, because this was pretty hyped up when it came out, because Romeo and Juliet had just had all that success, and this was kind of trying to to do the same kind of thing, even though Dickens and Shakespeare aren't the same, but it was that same mentality. It was a competent movie. I haven't watched it in a while, but I remember liking it when it came out, just thinking it wasn't that great of an adaptation of the book.
My number four is, you had mentioned maybe Alfonso Cuarón as being one of your favorite directors. This guy, I wouldn't put him in my top five, but he's a director that I like an awful lot. And I was super excited to see Sidney Lumet's Before the Devil Knows You're Dead back in 2007, starring Philip Seymour Hoffman, Ethan Hawke, Marissa Tomei, and Michael Shannon. I was excited to see this movie, not just because of the cast, and the cast is great. This was a little early in Michael Shannon's run, at least for me. But Philip Seymour Hoffman at that point was prime Philip Seymour Hoffman. To me, it was Lumet was the draw for me. The dude had a hell of a run in the 70s with Serpico, Murder on the Orient Express, Dog Day Afternoon, Network. You throw The Wiz in there right at the end of the decade, just for good measure. And there are certain directors that when I think of decades, I think of these particular directors. When I think of the 80s, I think of Spielberg. When I think of the 90s, I think of Tarantino. When I think of the 70s, I do think of Sidney Lumet. Now, certainly there are guys that span all of those decades and more power.
Scorsese has something to say about the 70s.
Yeah, Scorsese would have been one that I would mention as well. I don't mean to say that they were the best directors in that era. For me, sort of their style and their movies, I think, kind of capture how I feel and how I view that decade. Now, I wasn't alive in the 70s, so for me, it's all kind of revisionist history, but I do think that Sidney Lumet was certainly one of the best directors working at the time. And what I had read about this movie leading up to it, I thought it would be very more akin to Dog Day Afternoon, more so than some of the stuff that he had been making before The Devil Knows You're Dead. And like with a lot of older actors or older directors that I have some kind of affinity for, I'm always kind of rooting for them to hit that last home run, or as they're coming to the end of their careers, I want to see him get one more, you know, spectacular movie or a spectacular performance. And I guess if we're going to keep the baseball analogy, this ended up being Lumet's last movie. And I guess he probably maybe hit a double to the warning track. A really good heist movie about a really bad heist that kind of goes terribly wrong and just keeps going even terribly wronger. Hoffman and Hawke play brothers, if you can believe that, who plan to knock over their parents' jewelry store to cover some drug or child support debts. Ideally, the robbery is supposed to go off without any violence, but boy, is there a ton of killing in it for what's supposed to be a nonviolent crime. As Hoffman and Hawke continue to try and dig themselves out of one hole, they hop into a bigger hole, and the situation sort of begins to fly off the rails as the characters follow that. Hoffman is great, as you would expect, but I think for me, Ethan Hawke matches him. You get a great performance from the leads in a story that doesn't pull any punches. It's gritty, it's real, it has real characters with real flaws. And really, that statement could be any number of Lumet movies, and I guess that's kind of a good note to go out on then.
Yeah, I had this on my list, but I'm going to replace it because I had so many other also-rans. It didn't cross my mind. I assume this should be on your list because it is up in your wheelhouse. And I like it because it is a heist movie, but it's the aftermath of the heist. And so many heist movies are building up to that heist. This is...
Yeah, the heist the happens fall in Act down. 1.
Yeah, and it's a brutal movie. I think it's one of my favorite Philip Seymour Hoffman performances. And that says, for somebody who has that kind of career, that says a lot. Because he's not the Philip Seymour Hoffman you're used to in this. Like, he's not that lovable, doughy guy.
He's not really a character actor in this one.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
He's pretty, yeah.
He's a shithead.
Yeah, yeah. He's not the lovable, doughy Philip Seymour Hoffman. Ethan Hawke does match him. It is a good movie. I feel like it was under the radar almost. Like I think
so too.
Yeah, like I don't think it's been seen by as many people that should have seen it. My number four goes back to 2009, just a couple years after Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. It's Daybreakers, directed by the Spierig brothers. I hated Undead, their Australian zombie movie. slash alien movie.
I kind of liked that.
I love the one character, but the movie overall,
the
I
redneck
think just,
guy.
Yeah, yeah, the naked guy. Yeah. Like I loved him, but the rest of the movie, I felt the last half just falls apart. But there was a lot of good stuff in there that I was excited to see them do this new take on vampires. It takes place in the very, very far away future of 2019, which we could very well reach this point at the rate we're going. Almost all the humans are vampires now, and they still need human blood, but humans are getting less and less. They're trying to develop a alternative, and it's, I wouldn't consider it a horror movie. Like, it's a vampire movie, so it has those elements to it, but
it's not really a genre movie.
It's not, because it fits into a few.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it an action movie.
There's science there, so but is it sci-fi? Like, it's
maybe it is science fiction.
It's like a thriller. It's like a sci-fi thriller would probably be the most accurate. It got a major release here, and it was hyped up, and I think, I don't know that it did that great, because I think people went expecting like an Underworld type movie. That's not what you get here. I'll compare it to something that's, for some reason, I've been thinking about Alien Nation a lot, and I kind of compare it in somewhat to that, to where it's just an alternate like world to where most everybody is vampires, and how do you survive in that kind of scenario? Ethan Hawke, I mean, he carries it. He's really the only name.
Willem Dafoe is in it,
too.
Oh,
yeah, Willem Dafoe is in there, too, yeah. Because Isabel Lucas and Sam Neill. So, I mean, I guess there was a little bit more star power than I remembered. But it's just a different take. And the Spear Brothers, they did another movie with him that I'm not going to mention in case it does make somebody else's list.
It might.
I want to talk about it either as an also-ran or if it shows up on somebody else's list. But it was just a cool movie that I feel like got overlooked because it wasn't that vampire action movie that I think people expected.
Yeah, in 2009, like, it wasn't Underworld and it wasn't Twilight, so I don't think people knew what the hell to do with it.
This is to Underworld what Drive was to Fast and the Furious. Where on the surface, you think you're getting
You
A,
could, yeah.
But you get B.
And you'd be sorely disappointed if you were expecting the Fast and the Furious from Drive.
Well, somebody threw out a lawsuit trying to claim that it was marketed like Fast and the Furious. That's the only reason I thought of that. But yeah, Daybreakers is my number four.
My number three is a movie that, on the surface, I didn't love when I watched it. And then the more I started thinking about it, I don't know if I convinced myself that I liked it more than I did, or if I just looked at it from a different point of view. And that was from 2014, Richard Linklater's Boyhood, starring Ellen Coltrane, Patricia Arquette, and Ethan Hawke. I do love the premise of this movie much more than I love the actual execution, or should I say the finished product. It takes a certain amount of balls for everyone involved to attempt a movie that would take 12 years to film off and on. And what if something happens to this kid like 9 years into the movie, or he turns out to be a shitty actor? It's not like you can write him out of the plot, or you can't recast him. That would kind of defeat the purpose. So I give Linklater a ton of credit for pushing his chips into the center of the table. With that being said, he's actually my least favorite part of the movie. The older Mason gets, the less I like him. And I think that's probably more on me not really relating to the kind of kid that Mason becomes.
Like, you like younger boys as opposed to, like,
absolutely
teenage.
I'm not
boys.
Yeah, once they turn like 9, I'm just not interested. I was much more interested in the relationship between Arquette and Hawk. As much as Mason changes, I think that the parents may change even more. Watching a movie filmed like this is a little like watching a time lapse of leaves changing during the seasons. You can very distinctly tell that there has been growth from these characters from scene to scene in the entire family. And I think you can kind of see where especially Arquette and Hawk are headed. You can sort of predict their arc. You can't really see where the kid is going to go, maybe just because he's a bit more dynamic of a character, but it feels like the story or the progression that Hawk and Arquette go through are maybe a little more present in movies, so it's not a big surprise to see the journey that they go on. I do think that the movie kind of tends to drag on at the end. I really think that the last 10 to 15 minutes, you really don't need. After Mason gets to college and he meets a girl, I thought that would be kind of a great ending. I don't know that we need to see them like go off and do drugs in the desert or whatever it was that they did. But hey, if you film for 12 years, what the hell? Throw in an additional 15 minutes, right?
I'm shocked that this actually made your list, because when you think of certain actors and they're tied to a director, obviously they work with other directors, but there's that connection.
Well, yeah, Linklater's got...
Linklater and Ethan Hawke. If it weren't for you, there wouldn't be a single Linklater movie mentioned, because I'm not a Linklater fan.
I've not seen any of the Sunsets.
I respect him as a filmmaker, but I'm not a fan of him as a filmmaker. Right. I just don't like his movies, and I think that came through in our Dazed and Confused episode. I like the ambition of this movie, but I feel like the idea and the ambition was better than the finished product.
I agree, and like I said, I think it's a lot just because I didn't like the kid, and it's a movie about the kid. Yeah.
My number, whatever, 3 probably. It's what I replaced The Devil Knows You're Dead with. It's from 2014, written and directed by Andrew Niccol. It's good kill. It's a really cool take on a war movie, essentially, because Ethan Hawke is a pilot who's been grounded, and now he's just flying drones in the Middle East from an office in Las Vegas. It's him dealing with not just the not being in the sky where he wants to be, but the damage he can do with the press of a button. It spills into what that's doing to his family life with January Jones and their kids. And it's a good Ethan Hawke movie. This is shows like Ethan Hawke has been working for 30 years because of the ability he has. Like, he's not just skating by for 30 years. Like, he's leading movies. And this movie is the kind of thing that is built around your lead performance. If your lead performance is weak, the movie suffers. And Niccol got a great performance out of him between Lord of War, another Ethan Hawke movie that we'll get to later. But it's a good movie built on Ethan Hawke. Like, yeah, Bruce Greenwood's good. January Jones is January Jones. But the story it tells is only compelling if you care about Ethan Hawke. And here he's a dick. Like, he goes home, he's a prick to his wife and kids, but you get it. Like, you understand where he's coming from, and like, you understand what they're asked to do. You're basically flying remote control airplanes all day, but you can kill a dozen people with the press of a button, and that's your job. It's a really cool look at that, because he is at war, but he gets to go home to his family at the end of the day. I thought it was a really interesting concept and really nice execution on there.
2014 was rather an interesting year for Ethan Hawke. We have already mentioned two movies from that year, and this will be our second movie from the Spierig brothers. It was Predestination, which I'm guessing is the movie you were referring to earlier, starring Ethan Hawke, Sarah Snook, and Noah Taylor. I guess it's not an actual rule. I was pretty able to grasp the plot of Back to the Future, but I think that time travel movies can be tough to follow, especially when the story unfolds non-linearly. Though, if you're really going to get into it, time isn't necessarily linear, so the movie's plot actually unfolds perfectly. It's kind of circular, and in theory, you could start watching it at almost any point in the movie, and by the time you come back around to the end, you will have experienced the whole thing. Of course, there are some twists in here that begin to become predictable, if not completely outlandish, the further into this onion we peel the layers back. I do particularly enjoy the application of futuristic technology into contemporary times, or since most of the movie, I believe, takes place in the 70s, you have this futuristic technology of time travel, which was invented, I think, in like the 80s or something. Hawke's had a couple really cool sci-fi movies, and for him to do a relatively small movie like this, I think shows that he actually does read the scripts that he's talking about doing, and he picks movies that he's interested in. They may not be of mass appeal, and I think that's probably been true for his entire career, but if it's a project he's into, he'll do it, and he does great in it. Predestination was one that I think just showed up on Netflix or something, and I was like, yeah, all right, let's give this a whirl. Holy shit.
Yeah, I like this movie a lot. I am interested in what the Spirit Brothers do. They have a Helen Mirren movie they're working on, and they're going to do the next Saw, which it'll be interesting to see what they do there. But your point is something I was going to piggyback onto about Ethan Hawke, where if I see Ethan Hawke's in a movie, I'll check it out. Predestination is one that randomly showed up, and then there's another one that's randomly on Amazon called Regression, which I checked out. That's a solid movie. Most of his movies, they're not world-breaking great movies, but they're good. And there's one coming out with Travolta in it that at this point in Travolta's career, I pretty much skip Travolta, but Ethan Hawke being in it makes me want to see it just because he does make great decisions. Even if the movie isn't great, there's something about it. It's unique. He's never let himself fall into a pigeonhole.
He's not doing a cookie-cutter vampire movie or a cookie-cutter sci-fi movie. There's something interesting about it. Whether or not the movie is carried off wonderfully can be an entirely separate argument, but at least there was something that interested him, and there was a better-than-average chance that it probably interest me, too.
Just going through and doing this list, I found In the Valley of Violence, 10,000 Saints, and Cymbeline, all movies that I've never really heard of or seen much of, but now I want to see them because he was in them. And looking into them, they all seem kind of interesting. My number two, we talked about how this expands. I think the most recent movie on my list is the 2014 Good Kill that we had. And my number two goes to 1985. So you're looking at a 29-year window. It is the first thing that shows up in Ethan Hawke's credits. It is directed by Joe Dante, director of Gremlins, Explorers from 1985, starring Ethan Hawke and River Phoenix. I love this movie so much. I think I brought it up during another episode, or at least I tried to.
Is it a space?
Probably.
Space travel?
Yeah, because
I don't know. Lists are hard to figure out sometimes.
I mean, this movie's from 85, so I'm like 6 when it came out. The kids in it aren't much older than me, and they build a spaceship and travel to space. And Joe Dante's quirkiness comes through. It's a really fun, unique space travel movie where it's just these kids that somehow end up on an alien spaceship. And it's a lot of fun. And Ethan Hawke is great. It kicks off 30 years of him. River Phoenix was great in everything. And you even see it at this young age. Like, you just see those two. And you look back on it now, and it's like, all right, yeah, they're going places. One will be around for a little longer, but those kids are going to have good careers.
Spoiler alert, Ethan Hawke was the one that was around for longer.
Yeah, River Phoenix died. It's just such a fun movie with the alien and the car and... It's just a goofy, just fun adventure movie that when you're a kid, I ate it up. When you're a kid, you like seeing characters that are your age or not much old. Kids that you would hang out with doing cool stuff and traveling to space and meeting aliens, I think is pretty cool.
My number one is probably the obvious number one. When you think of this movie, I don't necessarily think of Ethan Hawke first.
King Kong.
He ain't got nothing on Denzel in Antoine Fuqua's Training Day from 2001. Also starring Denzel Washington and Tom Berenger, a lot of folks. I think the Training Day at the time, it's one of the more quotable movies that I remember from that time period. And certainly I think everybody remembers Denzel's performance. If you look back at it now, I think it's even a more important movie for just about everyone involved. I think it might be the actual tipping point when Denzel Washington became Denzel. He just achieved that one name status. It launched Fuqua as a director. It's still the best thing that David Ayer has written, and he probably isn't given the opportunity to be a director without this. And I think it showed the general movie public that they'll buy a movie that is based around Ethan Hawke. I don't mean to say that it's his movie, but he is matching one of the most dynamic performances you're ever likely to see. He's had opportunities to lead movies in the past, and most of the time, as we've mentioned, they were smaller movies that were either indie or didn't get much of a release at all. I think up until this point, it was either a movie like that or it was maybe a larger movie where he was sort of an accompanying piece that I think was almost in there because of his looks as his actual talent. But I think in this movie specifically, the talent question wasn't even a question anymore. Very clearly, the guy can carry a movie. Very clearly, he's not going to get swallowed up working with one of the most transcendent actors of our generation at absolutely the top of his game. I think that Training Day was the proof in that. If you had any questions about Ethan Hawke before 2001, I think they were gone. They were all answered in this movie.
Yeah, your number one ties it in a lot better because it co-stars Denzel, directed by Antoine Fuqua, much like Magnificent Seven. But if you look at Ethan Hawke in this movie, Denzel's part was written to be something special.
Right.
And when you take a part that's written like that and you give it to somebody like Denzel, who takes any part and elevates it, that's tough to sit next to for a whole movie. Because Ethan Hawke didn't have a ton to do.
He didn't have the King Kong line.
Yeah, he didn't have... He's next to this iconic figure. He's kind of the glue that keeps it all together. And it was a great performance by Denzel. I don't think it was an Oscar performance by him. I think this was, hey, we screwed up on the hurricane, so here you go. But I'm happy with it because Denzel deserves more Oscars than he has. I didn't love this movie, but I kind of figured it would make your list. My number one is my favorite Ethan Hawke movie. It was the first thing that came to mind. Directed by Andrew Niccol, who I mentioned previously, from 1997. It's Gattaca, another movie that takes place in the future with Ethan Hawke, Uma Thurman, and Jude Law, to where you have your really good-looking, genetically perfect people, and then everybody else. And Ethan Hawke is one of the everybody else, but uses some of Jude Law's stuff to kind of get in there. It's a really cool, unique sci-fi movie that takes on the class system, and it's relevant now. Like, I think it's more relevant now than it was in 1997. But it's a really, really cool movie, and Ethan Hawke is really, really good, and I love Jude Law still. And this is Jude Law. This is like prime Jude Law.
At his Jude Law.
I was going to say his most Jude Law-iest, but I switched it up. It was prime Jude Law. I'm not a Uma Thurman fan, but she's passable in this movie. It's just really cool atmospheric sci-fi, which if it's done well, I'll lead it up.
It's slow sci-fi. I knew that this one was going to be on your list because when you mentioned Ethan Hawke movies, this is the first one you mentioned. So I was okay with leaving it off. In fairness, it's been a long time since I've seen this movie, and I think I caught it maybe a little bit young and didn't really... I mean, I do appreciate the cinematography of the movie because it was beautifully
shot. It looks fantastic.
Yeah.
The colors?
Yeah, that's the thing that sticks with me, not necessarily the plot or the performances, though I would imagine that they're probably pretty good. I would have to probably go back and look at that.
It shows up on TV all the time, and it's one of those that I'll watch it whenever I see it on.
To be honest, that one might have been what I would consider an also-ran. It may have snuck on at 5, and if I left it off, that's okay. But I knew you were going to talk about it, so I didn't really go into great detail with my also-rans because I thought there might be some from that, you know, mid-90s era.
Reality Bites.
Reality Bites is one that I thought was going to be on your list.
It was close, but it got cut off last minute. Alive, it was one of my also-rans. That's really it. I already mentioned Regression, and everything else showed up on your list. I had a solid 10 movies for Ethan Hawke on here.
Yeah, and we got most of them in there with, technically, I don't think we had any crossover, but that's going to do it for our list of Ethan Hawke movies. If you can't remember what my number 5 was, it was Scott Derrickson's Sinister. Scott Derrickson may be featured next week in our fall preview. He's the gentleman that will be bringing Doctor Strange to the theater. So next week is one of our favorite episodes of the year to do. We like the preview ones. We just kind of talk a lot of movies, kind of rapid fire succession. I think Magnificent Seven is a good launching point into sort of the fall movie season. Certainly we'll talk maybe not a lot of Doctor Strange, but we will talk a lot about a lot of movies next week. So come back and see us again then. But until then,
keep it up.